Kara.
And I'm PJ.
And this is What the
Parent.
What the Parent. Brought to you by good old homemade cooking.
Ooh.
Who has time to do that anymore? Not me. Thanks for nothing, homemade cooking. No, I'm kidding. Fresh from scratch.
Homemade cooking is awesome.
Yeah, it actually is. And there is a way you can have time to do it by buying some amazing biscuits and from Mason-Dixie.
MasonDixieFoods.com.
Yeah, clean label, straight from the freezer to your oven to your mouth.
It's ironic that you're mentioning biscuits and Mason-Dixie Foods because today's guest is Asha Abalasia.
Yes. The owner, she's a kick-ass CEO.
Oh my God. She left corporate America to make biscuits for the world.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
Is what she's done. And they are amazing biscuits.
They're awesome biscuits. Plus, she just has amazing advice. Like how, if you want your kids to be entrepreneurial, go take on the world and fund your retirement. She's got some advice for you about how to make your kids, you know, a little more creative. Entrepreneurial.
Absolutely.
Like, kick butt like she is. And she's got great advice for girls, especially. Like, seriously, this is going to be an awesome interview.
Yes, yes. And she's she has mixed parents from, you know, from Middle East as well as from Asia. So she's got a lot of different influences in her life. You know, she grew up in Section 8 housing. And yet, you know, she goes from Section 8 housing to helping out Microsoft as a consultant and being, you know, one of the top peeps over at Audi and all these other things. Like she is a powerhouse and she's very, very direct. She doesn't, you know, she has a take no prisoners attitude, which I love.
It's great.
There's no BS with this.
I know.
With
this woman. She's going to tell it like it is. She's going to tell it like it is.
She is a firebrand and just a delight. She's so funny, so nice. And her attitude is take no prisoners. And you know what? She's not taking your
prisoners. That's right. That's right.
And that's why she's kicking ass all over the world.
Absolutely. And I just love her story. It's really one of those only in America stories. And I relate because my dad is Japanese and my mom is Irish English and I grew up in Texas and, you know, we have all our food there is all over the place. You know, like our dinner table was like, you know, rice and barbecue. Like there are a lot of things going on.
You know? Oh yeah.
But I love that her story, that food has become so central in her life and American food in particular, biscuits and homemade cooking so it's great.
It is. It's a great interview. We can't wait for you guys to meet her.
That's right.
She's very impressive.
Yes.
Very, very impressive. Yes. Without further ado, here's Miss Asha Abalasia from MasonDixieFoods.com.
That's right.
Asha, we're very excited to have you on. Asha is the founder and CEO of Mason Dixie Foods. If you guys haven't tried that or checked it out in Whole Foods and like 5,000 stores across the country, check it out because it is really excellent biscuits and scones, all made from scratch, super easy to bake. So thank you for doing that.
Oh yeah. So easy. From the freezer straight to your oven. Awesome.
Yes. And Asha is very, very, or Asha is very, very impressive because held executive positions at Fortune 500 companies, including Toshiba and Audi, consulted at Microsoft for God's sakes. You're blowing up the world. You got so many things going on. You're kicking butt on your biscuit business. You're in Forbes. You're also doing this whole potluck thing where you're providing mentorship to underserved children. It is a huge bite of life that you're taking and it's really cool to see. So we're very excited to have you on the show. So welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So, you know, to start off, we cannot get enough of your biscuits.
Our kids love these things. They cannot stop eating them, which is great because they have natural ingredients that you can actually understand. So feels good. It feels good that they're just eating them constantly. It's all good.
Yeah, not all preservatives. Your cheddar and chive ones, which are just, actually, they're even better than the ones at Red Lobster. Amazing. Amaze balls, right? The jalapeno ones, I make
so good.
I make a mean chili, and those go fantastic with chili. So, I mean, they are just like homemade. How did you, well, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you fell in love with biscuits and what made you form this wonderful company?
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky enough to grow up in a culture of food. I mean, I had a multicultural household. My mom's Korean. My dad was Palestinian Israeli. So, you know, it was a common argument at dinners, right? It was like, what cuisine were we going to have? And I think my parents just thought, you know, oh, I'm never going to win this argument out because my dad hated kimchi. My mom hated lamb. So they would never really agree on one of those cuisines.
Yeah.
So, you know, what always won out was American comfort foods. And ironically, when I was really young, when I was a baby, we lived above a corner store that my parents owned. And over time, my parents decided to get into having prepared food because there were a lot of folks that would come through the store asking for prepared lunches or hot lunches. So my mom used to prepare like anything from, you know, fried chicken gizzards to chitlins to collard greens, anything that like Southern affinities that people would really like to come for. So I grew up on that cuisine. And like I said, it was the table saver for many an argumentative what's for dinner. Everyone knows that argument, especially now with COVID, right?
Like, oh gosh. Yes.
You know? So yeah, I grew up around it. Not necessarily biscuits per se though, but you know, when I was about 10 years old, both my parents really started working a lot more and working two different jobs, and we became latchkey kids, right? So I was the oldest, and in, you know, Asian tradition, the oldest becomes a secondary mother.
Yep.
And sure. You know, I had two younger sisters that I had to like make sure their homework was done and make dinner and all that. And I remember, you know, that Thanksgiving when I was 10, it was the first Thanksgiving that my mom was like, I may not have time to make dinner, just find stuff that you want and you make it. And I was like,
That's a lot of pressure for 10.
It was a lot of pressure, but you know, we started learning how to cook when I was six, right?
Oh, like, yeah,
like
wow.
Nice.
How to use a knife. And, you know, I asked my sisters, right, what do they want for Thanksgiving? And of all the things to have, I'm thinking they're going to say stuffing, which, you know, I could put out of the, you know, what was it? Stovetop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I was hoping it was something like that. And they said biscuits. And I was like, first of all, where the hell did you even learn about this? Yeah. Second of all, like, where did you have them? Right. Cause I don't even know, like we really didn't have them at home. So I went to, and this is going to date me. I went to the public library and I rented a book or checked out a book.
Yep. Yep.
People forget those things, right? Actually-
I know.
Before a book?
Before Google. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I checked out a Southern cuisine book and it had a page on biscuits and I photocopied. Remember?
Oh, photocopies. Yeah.
I paid 10 cents for that photocopy. And it was like a one pager on biscuits and it was like five ingredients, super simple, right? And I remember I was like freaking out because it was like you needed a biscuit cutter. And I was like, where the hell do I get a biscuit cutter? And so my little Asian innovation brain went into the cupboard and I pulled out a glass, like a water glass.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this will work, right? So cut these biscuits out with water glasses and baked them off. And then I don't even know if they were good. Like, I can't even really remember. They might have been awful. I probably overworked the dough. No idea. But my sisters, like, loved them. And
awesome.
So every year after that, they'd be like, you know, are you making the biscuits? Are you making the biscuits?
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. So it was just one of those things where I was like, okay, well, this obviously has some resonance. So fast forward to when I decided to start Mason-Dixon, I just decided that, like, you know, that memory to me was very unique. And I thought, if I'm going to, by the way, the concept started as a restaurant. So, you know, my whole premise was trying to create a clean label, farm to table, you know, Southern fast casual concept, because I thought it was a sacrilege that, you know, KFC and Popeyes were the global vision for American Southern comfort food.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yes.
Not
yeah.
The case.
So true.
So, you know, I wanted to have all those nice comfort food things, anything from sausage gravy to, you know, cheddar grits, but I needed something to bind it all, right? Because it wouldn't make, I didn't want to be a full service restaurant where, you know, anything you want, your heart's content on the menu. It's not like that. I wanted to be quick service. So
sure.
I kind of looked to the bread as the key, because that's what Panera did.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, I saw that there was an opportunity. If I used a biscuit, one, it's the most iconically American thing ever. Two, it opened up a lot of worlds to having multiple day parts at the restaurant, right? Because it's a breakfast vehicle, it's a lunch vehicle, and it's a dinner side.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, that's kind of how when that culminated, it kind of all came together. And that's when I realized it was the it was kind of the key to the business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I just love the mixed heritage, the dinner table fights, because that happened at my house too. I grew up in the South and my dad was Japanese and my mom was from Houston, you know, so yeah. There's a lot of, you know, negotiating around that. It's just so interesting. And I feel so uniquely American And that's why I love that American food is binding, because that happened at our table too. You know, well, we instead of biscuits, there was always rice. So that was the Japanese concession. So we'd have steak and rice.
Hey, that's a great combo.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, it was fine. Yeah.
Well, and my mom was from Hawaii, right? So she was born and raised in Hawaii, and then I grew up in Florida, and in the community that I grew up in, there was no Asians. So not only were we the outliers, but my mom was known as being the best cook around, because, you know, they were having all the white bread, whatever. And my mom was busting out shrimp teriyaki or chicken teriyaki and shrimp tempura and all this other kind of stuff. That was just amazing. And I always won the argument of who's the best, you know, whose mom's the best cook.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
And I got and just as a side note, thank you for making these biscuits. Thank you for using that Asian innovation and getting that started, because this is one of the very, very few foods that we serve in this house, because we're both Karen and I, blended family. I have three kids. She has two. We have carnivores and omnivores and pescatarians and vegetarians.
Wow. We got peanut allergies.
We got kids who don't like Mexican food. We got kids who don't like Asian. God. They don't like Asian. And we're all Asian. We're like, what's wrong with you?
What are you talking about?
Finding some kind of commonality is damn near impossible. And this resonates with all of them.
Oh yeah, so the biscuits and the scones. They're gone.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for being customers. It's amazing to hear such a blended family is enjoying them. I love that I'm the problem solver.
Yes. Yes. Oh, so it continues. Like, and the dinner truce continues.
Oh yeah. And these biscuits are, you know, they're a work of art, right? Like, they come out, I call them little dense bites of love. Like, yeah. They're awesome.
Yes.
They're just awesome. So thank you.
They're great. So how do you feel like your family and your unique upbringing, you know, helped you, you know, in becoming an entrepreneur?
Well, I obviously, like I said, my parents had that little grocery store / restaurant. I used to carry out convenience store, I guess I'd call it. So they were entrepreneurial. I'd say my mom always, to me, was always more entrepreneurial than my dad. My mom always had the craziest ideas. Even to this day, I'll never forget, 2 years ago, ironically enough, I have a lot of friends that are amateur drag queens. And my mom currently is she's in the fashion industry, but in like more of the manufacturing side, right? So she works at a clothing manufacturer that makes clothing with stretch fabric, because that's a very unique pattern making capability.
Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So she's worked with anyone from Danskin to Nike to Under Armour, right? Anything that has a stretch coefficient on it. So she told me one day that she did the leotards for the National Ballet. And I was like, okay, cool. And she was like, yeah, I have this idea, but I don't really know how to do it. Can you help me? And I was like, sure, what's the idea? She was like, you know, for those guys, they dress like a lady. I want to make their underwear. And I was like, what the hell is she talking about? And I was like, you want to make guys' underwear? And she was like, no, you know, like, you know, the gay that want to, you know, wear like a lady's clothes. And I was like, okay, so drag queens. And she was like,
that's what I mean.
Yeah. She's like, I want to make the panties, you know, that they put their thing in. And I was like, you want to make a tuck panty.
Oh, that's like, mom.
Literally, it was like, how in the hell did you think about this?
Yes. Yes.
Well, then she tells me she's measuring like some male ballerina's like groin area. And she thought about it. And I was like, because I guess in male ballet, they do have to kind of cover it up, obviously.
Yeah, sure.
A lot hanging out there. So she's literally thinking like about the most random things ever as she's like staring at this guy's groin area, measuring the cross height. So, you know, my mom's been always very innovative. So I think I get a lot of it from her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, talk about creative.
Yeah.
Thank
and then
you.
She even had a name for it. She wants to call them Queen J's panties.
I love it. I love it.
See that? And the worst part is she didn't really think about queen as in like drag queen. She just wants to be the queen. So she
naturally
named them that. And I was like, mom, you have no idea how appropriate.
Oh, yes. It hits every,
that is awesome.
Every button. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's got it all.
That's fantastic.
Well, I had so many comments. I don't even know where to, I'm just going to say that was great.
All real in this family. So
That's right.
I mean, there's your next entrepreneurial.
Hey, if you see my face that's on the back of that box on a package of male tuck panties, you know who thought of it.
Well, because I don't know if anyone or if you want to see your face on the front of whatever product your mom is making.
Yeah, probably not.
I just can imagine it's going to be her head this time.
No. I love that problem solving. Like, how can I monetize this? I love that question is going through your mind.
Right. I'm just like, and the inspiration came at staring at a groin. I mean, that's
the way to go. So. I mean, all right, not to get too technical, but isn't that called a cod piece? Or am I thinking
have of no idea? And if you ask my mom, it would be derivatives of a lot of choppy English descriptors. So I have no idea. Like, I really don't even know how she even got into this whole conversation in her head. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's just, she was like, oh, because then she goes, oh, it's because we make these bras, you know, for the lesbians. And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, we're making these bras and this lady sells them on Amazon for millions of dollars. And I was like, what are you talking about? And apparently her company is making these like sports bras that really press, you know, women's breasts up against their chest so that they have a flatter chest. So if you're, you know, a lesbian who wants to have a more masculine look, you can press them back. And so, and interestingly enough, the woman that makes these things also makes bras for women that have had mastectomies.
Oh.
So she's just kind of like capitalized on all things breasts. So here's my mom thinking about boobs and groins. I know.
The exact conversation you want to have with your mom.
Yeah, that's very natural. So,
well, just as a side note, so your mom, you said was Korean, and yeah. Your dad is Palestinian Israeli, which I've actually, I've done some consulting. I've been around the world. I've been in that area. Mm-hmm. Normally they don't get along too well, both those Palestinians and the Israelis. How did your parents meet?
At a Jewish deli.
Oh, love it.
So my mom worked at a Jewish deli while she was in like a, what's it called? Like a 2-year college, getting her bookkeeping certificate or something like that. So she was, you know, at the cashier of this Jewish deli. And then my dad was a frequent customer. Dad was tall, dark, and handsome. So obviously my mom was into that. Sure. And, you know, he has an interesting story too. So it was in Baltimore where I am now. And my dad came to the US via the whole like Detroit automotive channel, right? He got there, worked in the automotive sector, hated it. Followed this group of other, I guess, Arab people to Baltimore that had like a network of people with jobs. And the job that he got here was faking as a Saudi prince who wanted to screw around and not go to classes at Johns Hopkins. So he would pay other Arab men to go sit in the class for him and do his homework. And so he could go and do whatever he wanted. So my dad was a fake Saudi prince at Hopkins sitting in these classes, and I don't know what sketchy, like Craigslisty network this came from.
Whoa.
But they paired him with an actual Arab student who was actually trying to, you know, improve his, you know, life.
Sure.
And so, but they would meet up and he would copy the homework from the guy that was actually doing things to improve his life.
Yeah.
So my dad was literally sitting there copying like civil engineering homework from this other guy at the deli. Cause they both, you know, they ate kosher. So that's like one of the few places they could go eat.
Sure.
So that's where they met, because my dad would come there like every Wednesday after class or whatever the hell it was. Yeah. My mom was into it. So
we might have to have your parents on.
Well, then my dad passed away, unfortunately. Oh,
I'm so sorry.
The secrets die with him, right? Who knows what the sketchy Craigslisty job is. You know, my mom, she's very like camera shy and mic shy until we get a couple soju's in her. So as long as it's soju.
There you go.
Oh, well, hey, we're all about soju. Don't worry. That stuff.
It's delicious.
In fact, that should be your next biscuit. Soju biscuits. Yum.
Oh, so you have made this, I mean, amazing business. What advice should we give, you know, our kids, our teens and tweens, you know, if they have ideas or if they want, you know, to start their own business, what advice would you give to kids who maybe want to follow in your footsteps?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So one of the things I'm really proud of the folks at my company about is that we've always embraced helping people to advance themselves no matter what their background was. So I grew up in Section 8 housing. My parents obviously were very poor. And I always say that the reason I am where I am is because I got access to resources quickly because my parents emphasized education. And more than that, they also emphasized healthy eating habits. You know, like I said, I was making scratch made food since 6 years old.
Sure.
So when you're bred with that kind of mentality, you go out into the world and you do big things. So I think a lot of the team members I've been able to hire over the course of the 6 years we've been in business also emulate that. So one of the partnerships we have is with this school in West Baltimore, which typically doesn't get a great rap, but these are underprivileged kids that are really striving to make something of themselves. And they have this entrepreneurship and innovation track that we belong to. And basically we create internships and entrepreneurial partnerships with them. So apprenticeships, things like that. We actually have two students joining us this summer who are going to be business interns and apprentices. So the reason I bring it up is because, you know, watching their brains trigger all these cool ideas at another high school that we did an entrepreneurship like pitch slam with, I was incredibly impressed that these like 16, 17 year olds, what they were able to come up with, like they were better pitchers than I've actually witnessed as an adult pitching an actual company. Like they were phenomenal. And I think the similarity I saw between both of those experiences and these kids is that no one tells them any idea is stupid.
Yeah.
One. So never tell your kids their ideas are stupid. Yeah. They could be the next Queen Jay. Okay?
That's right.
Yes, they could. Aim high or low. I don't know.
But there you go. So never tell them that our ideas are stupid. Yeah. I think access to entrepreneurship opportunities is the biggest thing. They've got to be around people who know how to start companies. Most of the time, you know, most parents in this country are working a 9-to-5 job. They're not the owner of the 9-to-5 job.
Correct. Yeah.
So they have a limited perspective and experience. And the first thing that they want to say is, oh, just go get yourself a good job. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a kid that's obviously prone to thinking about crazy ideas, the last place they're going to do well is at a 9-to-5 job.
Right.
So don't do it, right? Don't push them into it. And I think, you know, get them into a business internship as quickly as possible. Even if they're making photocopies, they got to be shadowing an owner.
Yeah.
So they know what that life is like too. Because the other end of it is they could have great ideas, but they could hate the business side of things.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and you know, that could be easily discouraged, or it could really lead to another pathway where maybe they are just an innovator. Maybe they need to be in the innovation track at a big company, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, have the free will to be thinking. And so that's the thing. I think watching, always give your kid access to the information and tools that they need anytime that they're interested in something. Because in this day and age with information overload, it's so easy for them to be uninterested so quickly.
Yeah, that is so true. You know,
so capitalize on that, I think.
Wow. No, that's excellent advice. And you're right. A lot of times, you know, you grow up as, you know, as a kid and your parents are always like, you know, hey, go be a lawyer, go be a doctor, go work at a factory, go do something, because they feel that their future is secure in a larger company. And, and instead of, you know, that's basically just like saying, just get on this boat and enjoy the ride instead of build your own ship and take it where you want.
And you know what the saddest thing is, and I don't know if you guys experienced this with your parents. I don't know if your parents were actually immigrants or if they were just, you know, Asian ethnicities living in America. But as a child of immigrants, it's the old mindset that they think that big companies have a protective mechanism for you, that it's a secure future. That is not the case today.
Oh, not at all. Yeah.
You know, it's the most insecure employment ever to work for a large company. You are a minnow in a pond versus, you know, a big fish. And people forget too. I had the pleasure of being a part of the 10,000 Small Business Program with Goldman Sachs. And it was eye-opening because the stats are diabolically sad, but also incredibly inspiring, because the American economy runs around small businesses. Mm-hmm. Less than 1% of the American economy is contributed to by large corporations.
Wow.
And 98% of the employment in this country is from small business. So, and they qualify small businesses as companies under 250 employees.
Wow.
So if you think about that statistic, any small business, it could be a sole proprietorship, it could be a team of five, you owning that business will have more financial impact on this country than Microsoft ever will.
Wow.
And people don't realize that because, you know, oh, Microsoft employs thousands of people. But you got to remember, it's not all in the U.S. And you got to remember, these are highly skilled, highly specialized people that couldn't just generally enter the job market, where small business owners are more willing to take risks based on personality types, niche skill sets, niche experience sets. I mean, the perfect example is our product innovator, Lauren. I worked really hard to find her because I did not want to hire a bakery scientist innovator. I didn't want somebody coming from big companies like General Mills or Grupo Bimbo or, you know, Sara Lee to come work for me, because they're just going to bring big company mentality and then freak out when I tell them they don't get to be in a factory to go figure out if it works. They got to make it on a fucking 4x6 tabletop. Right.
Right.
That is hard for anyone in that industry to do. They'll walk out. They'll be like, absolutely not. Right. So I wanted somebody also who had artisanal baking experience, who likes the challenge of making something fantabulously amazing with their own hands, and then learning how to get it in a factory setting to work the same way that two hands made it. And you can only get that by finding a very niche person who's worked in artisanal baking, pastry, probably for higher end bakeries, not just like, you know, the local donut shop, right?
Yeah.
And that's hard to find, because you're also asking somebody who loves the experience of watching someone in a restaurant unveil their dessert and freak out. Lauren's never going to see somebody, unless somebody's taped it on Instagram, eat her food.
So,
you know, tearing her out of that element, it's like tearing an artist away from, you know, a paintbrush, right? It was a very nuanced experience, but, you know, she tells me every day, like, she could never go back because her world is so different now. It's opened up so much, and she enjoys the thought that she's impacting thousands of people now instead of a few dozen a night, right? So that's a niche skill set that I, as a small business owner, needed, that's not on a general job description that Microsoft or General Mills has out there, right? So that's the beauty of small businesses in this country and what we're capable of doing. And it only comes with the niche concepts and ideas and services that they're providing, you know, that big companies never will.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. This thing that you have going on now, this potluck, tell us more about that. This mentorship program, it's very cool, and would love to share that with everyone.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people think it was something born out of the BLM movement that happened, you know, in the surges of last spring, but it really wasn't. Myself, and I really should give credit to Ibrahim Basir, who's the founder and CEO of A Dozen Cousins. They make phenomenal pre-prepared beans. So like, you know, when you go to like the store and Goya says that they make black beans, and it's like Latin inspired black beans.
Right.
It's not. It's basically black beans with like two pieces of green pepper in it. So that's not beans. He actually has recipes for these amazing, like ethnically inspired bean derivatives. And so anyway, I met him through another group of people of color founders in the consumer products food industry. And as you can see, I'm very loud, I'm very opinionated, and I'm very direct. So I was on this call and they were asking all these questions, and I was like, y'all are really off base. We got to hit them like this. So he emailed me afterwards and said, hey, I've been talking to another guy named Arnulfo Ventura, who's the CEO of Bean Fields. Again, they make bean-based tortilla chips. And they were like, you know, we really want to create this group. I have a name for it. It's called Project Potluck. But I need some people that could really add to this that would, you know, take this to fruition. And I was like, okay, well, what's the goal? And he was like, you know, I really want to provide three pillars, and it's mentorship in the consumer product space. So if you're a person of color and you want to advance your career, or you want to start a business of your own, or anything in this consumer product space, doesn't have to be food, could also be personal care, this would facilitate meeting other people of color to help you get your stuff off the ground or advance yourself. The other thing is just community in general. And that's the pillar that I head up, and community in all things from education and events to networking to talking about harder issues, right? Like facing discrimination in the workplace when it's unintentional, right? Not saying like you got fired because you're black. It's saying that like you've watched successive new hires come in without any indication that management even thought about potentially bringing in a person of color instead of somebody with a Harvard degree, right? There's a lot of that still happens today. It's like, to me, it's unintentional racism, because it's that whole Wells Fargo CEO comment, right? It's a pipeline issue. Well, there's no fucking pipeline issue if you start putting them in the job place. If you're making excuses, they'll never get started. So there will be a pipeline issue.
Right.
So, you know, there's that element. And then the last element is basically we have a tech community where it's a private LinkedIn channel for professional development purposes and professional networking. So among all those three places, we've, you know, put our heads together to come up with, you know, how to get this off the ground. Because you got to think, as founders and CEOs, we're pretty limited in the people that we interact with on a regular basis. So I was like, you know, what's the goal? And we were like, you know, if we can get 200 people in here, that would be amazing. And so, you know, it was crazy when we first started it. I was like, all right, well, let's launch this thing. So we launched this group on LinkedIn and they were like, all right, invite every person of color you know in CPG. And I was like, okay, I'll do that on Thursday. So they go in, they start. And I go in and like everyone that I knew that was a person of color had already been invited because I literally knew like 24 people. That's how sad Faze was. And, but it was crazy because you forget the virality of good work and good people and what happens. So we started with maybe 100 people that we knew and those, and we told those 100 people, please invite anyone else that you know that's in this industry right now. So they invited another 100 people. So we got to 200 people before we even did the press launch. And then that 200 turned into 500 by the time the press launch happened. And then now we're at over almost 800 people in the LinkedIn channel, probably a couple hundred more on our email list. We're trying to merge it all. It's grown so much faster than we had initially intended. So like, it's now going to need to be a real thing. We thought this could just be some, you know, just a professional group of people that want to get together. And now all of a sudden, like, we're like, man, people are throwing money at us. So we're like, okay, we got to get a 501c3 designation now because people want to, you know, invest in this, right? They want to watch it grow, not invest, but like, you know, put money towards it so they can see it really blossom. So it's been fabulous. We've had amazing speakers from Tristan Walker down to a group of, and I know this sounds trivial, but I think it's really important that people understand, you know, typically when I go to these like marketing 101 type, you know, Zooms or panel discussions, it's always like a bunch of white women, right?
Yeah.
Because like, that's what, just so you know, women are only good at two things. Okay. It's marketing and HR. That's all we know.
Oh, geez. So, yeah.
You know, so that's typically the makeup, right? And it's usually white women. So, you know, it was the first time I had ever been a part of, and many people also said it, which is heartbreaking, but at the same time, really invigorating to know that we were able to do this. We brought in four people of color, literally every type of color under the sun.
Yeah.
All experts in marketing who are kicking ass and taking names, not just in the CPG industry, but in the products industry in general.
Awesome.
And it's just like things like that, right? It's about exposure and it's about, you know, seeing people that look like you doing well.
Yeah.
Because I always tell people when I was a kid, I maybe would have bypassed trying to figure out my life had I had access to things outside of a teacher, a construction worker, and a nurse as being like high paid jobs. Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what I could be. Like even when, you know, my parents say, oh, you know, typical immigrant thing, like be a doctor or a lawyer. I was like, first of all, the only doctor I know is my pediatrician.
Right.
And the second thing is who gives me shots and I hate.
And then, of course.
You know, second person that I meet, I've never met a lawyer. So I was just like, I don't even know what they do.
Yeah.
So you know, if they don't have perspective, how the hell am I going to say I want to do it?
Right.
And I used to think this as a kid, I wish I could meet a business person. Cause I said, what do business people do?
Yeah.
Like, it was mind-boggling to me, right? Because a business in my mind was a grocery store that served chitlins, right? Like I was like, that's a business.
Right. That is a business. So, yeah.
It is a business, but it wasn't like what people think, you know, white collar business is. And I didn't even know what it was. Had I had that exposure, I might've gone to business school and given myself a leg up in my regular career a bit faster than I had to. Cause I had to work all these different channels to get there.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I always used to say, I wish I could just meet, I can't remember what movie it was. It wasn't Wall Street, but it was one of those types of movies. I think it was Glenn Close who played some business lady, some powerful businesswoman. And I said, man, I would love to meet a woman in a red power suit one day. And that's the lady I'm going to latch onto to figure out how I'm going to get the hell out of the project.
Yeah, absolutely.
And having ever met her when I was 10, instead of meeting her when I was 20,
right?
You know, my life would have been really different. So, you know, access is to me, the biggest reason why we started Project Pollock is giving these people access to other people that look like them who potentially have succeeded and gotten to the next level faster than they might on their own.
Yeah.
And for people who want to look it up, Project Potluck is basically going to be at potluckcpg.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Did you, Red Power Suit, did you ever meet the person with the Red Power Suit?
I did. Her name was Cynthia Fondriest. And when I was in my first white collar, you know, 9-to-5 job that paid me a whopping $37,000 a year.
don't spend it all in one place.
That's right.
Literally could have made more money as a server. Why the hell I did that job is beyond my comprehension. I worked on these like marketing proposals, and one of the team members we had to construct, our teams we had to construct, involved her business, and in comes literally as like, it was like a aura was around her. She was this blonde haired, probably late 50s at that point, in a red power suit with like actual heels, not like naturalizers, like actual like pumps on. And she comes in and she's like, who the fuck are you? And she's, I was like, yeah, I want to know her. And she took me under her wing and I shadowed her. She just opened up my entire world because she basically was like, I see a lot of myself in you. And she would literally just take me under her wing. And, you know, she got me my first jobs out in LA, which is how I got to the Microsoft position. She, when I came back to this side, I got this great consulting gig. And so I came back out this way and I was helping her with her business at the end. Mm. And sadly she passed away a few years ago from ALS. So she's no longer with us, but she, every day something good happens. I know it's because of her.
That's
every
wonderful.
Day.
That's so great. You know, and it's interesting too, because you talk about, you know, the male dominated business world in, yep. in some aspects. Do what specific advice would you give to girls who, you know, maybe
looking at doing their own thing or making their mark,
wearing their own power suit someday?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that girls today, teen girls today, are very blessed because the world is a little bit different than even, you know, when I was a teen. I think there's more exposure to women in power positions now more than ever. You know, I left Audi because I was constantly discriminated against. I got passed up for 3 jobs I was way more qualified for than the male counterparts that got them. And literally, I said this to my boyfriend at the time. I was like, you know, I'm going to walk away from this job and there still will not be a woman in the C-suite or in the board, you know, the Vorsprung board. And I think I was like maybe a year and a half ago, there's for the first time, there's a woman in the Vorsgen board. Mm-hmm. Of course she's in marketing.
Of course.
But, you know, but there is a woman there in the German automotive industry. And that's a pretty big deal now. So yeah. I think it's exposure to other powerful women. Women should seek out women mentors. Mm-hmm. Don't follow dudes. They do not have the same path that you will ever get.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, and that's hard to find. It takes more work for them. Sadly, it does, but they have to seek out other women in powerful positions to really understand. And I will say the beauty about women is that I've yet to find another woman that doesn't want to help another woman. Like I really
That's never so true.
You know, don't hesitate to think that if you ask that they'll say no. They may be busy, but it's not a no. Or as soon as you get to them, it's a forever partnership, I think. So that's something I would definitely say is helpful. And I think it also depends on the industry segment that they want to go into. I think it's really important for women who don't want to go into standard female businesses to really think about how they're going to find women mentors in that space. Mm-hmm. Don't just think because I'm a woman, I got to go into fashion. Or if I want to create a product, it has to be makeup.
Right.
No.
Right.
Stop. Right. Like really broaden your horizons a bit and really think through it and figure out where you want to be one day and find those people. And you know what? And it's okay too. I think women get really discouraged really quickly.
Yeah.
Because we're still taught that like we're not good enough. So like, you know, that's always a stigma that prevents you from being good enough. But don't be discouraged if the answer to the mentorship or the answer to, you know, you're in that industry now, you're looking at it and you hate it. That's not a bad thing. Don't get discouraged and think you have to still wallow in that and keep hustling. Get right. out of it. Change. Guys do it all the time.
Yeah.
Lateral movements are fine. Women are so, because climbing the ladder is like only as new as like 1983.
Right.
You know, women just think, oh man, I got to stay on this ladder. I'm never going to find a new ladder. That is not the case. There, it, think of it more like a fire escape, right? Like you can go left and go up a new set of stairs. You don't have to stay on a straight line up.
So
and I think that's really hard for women today to get their head wrapped around, because who is their mentor, right? Or it's probably their mom. And if she's a working mom, she is risk averse because it took her 30 years to get to a position a guy took 3 years to get to.
Right. So true.
Yeah, so true.
You know, that's the complication. You get good advice from your mom and you listen to it, but your mom's perspective, unfortunately, it's old now because the industries are moving so quickly and time has moved so quickly. You have to get current advice to really excel.
Yeah. So true. Such great advice.
Yeah. No kidding. Is there a point for you personally? Like I come from a lineage of entrepreneurship. So I totally get what you're saying. I'm a big believer in everything that you're talking to. Is there a point where you have designated for yourself where you will sit back and say, all right, I've made it. I've done it.
Oh, that's a really good question. I feel like no, in many ways, because I always tell people I am unhireable at this point. Like no one will want to hire me. I would be an absolute nightmare in your Fortune 500 organization. I will flip tables. So you probably do not want to hire me. But I think, cause I'm perfectly happy doing this for the rest of my life.
Of course.
Because I love the place that I'm in. I've also never been a monetarily driven person. Like I've made way more money than I make right now. So like there's not anything you could pay me to make me stop, because life is one experience and you only get so many years at it and you got to live it the way you want to live it. So in many ways, I think that I'm already there, right? Because I get awesome opportunities to talk to people like you guys on a Saturday for no reason. And, you know, I get to help, you know, 17-year-olds in a hard up part of town. You should have seen that we have this one intern coming in. She finished her interview and she immediately called her dad, even though our office is like 3,000 square feet. Okay. It's not massive. So you can see and hear everything everyone says. She's on the phone and she's like, Daddy, it's like a real office.
Aww.
It's like, oh my God. Cause I remember that exact moment for me. I think that's why I say like, I'm already there. The fact that I can do that for a kid right now, I'm already there. You know, I think but then the, you know, child of an immigrant part of me comes out and it's like, well, I'm still not able to give my mom, you know, the $1 million mansion.
Right.
You
know, right. Of course.
So, well, she's not going to need it
with the queen panties.
The queen J thing going.
The drag queen panties. Yeah. I think we're on a key ticket for her retirement, but you know, that I'm still not there. And that's, you know, part of it does make me sad because that's why I did all this. Everything I've done to date has been because I knew that my parents would never have a retirement plan.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm almost there and that to me is like the personal pinnacle, but I'd say from a career path pinnacle, I'm already there. You know,
that's fantastic. I just love that.
Yeah. No kidding. Well, first of all, proud of you.
Thank
you. I know. I mean, like really, you're just kicking butt.
You're a freaking powerhouse. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So what are any big expansion plans? You're going into any other type of, Are you sticking strictly with bakery and biscuits and scones?
Funny you should ask.
Oh,
oh good.
So in a couple of weeks here, we're going to be launching, honestly, something that's transformational to our business. And we're launching the first microwavable, clean label breakfast sausage biscuit.
Bring it. Please.
Yeah. So talk about teen parenting.
This yes, please.
Any of your problems. So
no, it's not teen parenting because none of my kids are going to get it because I'm going to eat all that.
There you go. I mean, that's fine too. But you know, for us, this has been in the making since we started our restaurant because people have always said everything that we make today is an inspiration from our customers. They've asked for it. We tried it at the restaurant. If it sold well, we made a product out of it. So this has been 5 years in the making because the meat and protein industry is never going to do this. So it's really crazy to me that a baking brand is going to be the reason that a natural protein gets integrated into a frozen handheld entree.
Oh.
And I just think it's going to be a game changer. The product line by, you know, that cowboy wearing red box.
Yes.
That just size of the prize, that's a $2 billion item. So think about the number of people consuming that hot garbage every day.
Yes, which it is. I think,
And when this product launches at Whole Foods nationally and then in the Southeast at Publix next month. So if you grab them at Whole Foods, I encourage you to get Jimmy Dean and I encourage you to try it side by side.
Yep.
Because it's astronomically different. And to me, it's like, man, the people that we actually watched this. One of my teammates went to the grocery store and she watched this woman take a Jimmy Dean box out of the freezer And she wrote it down because she was like, oh my God, this is hilarious. She sighed and she was like, ah, I hate this. I hate myself. Yeah. And then she threw it into the.
Yes. That's how I feel like, about that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because it's the only thing you could get if you don't have an option. So now you do. Now you will.
Oh.
So this is a game changer for us. And it takes us a little bit out of the baking world, but not really. It's our same signature biscuit, just bigger.
Yum.
For a sandwich. It's pre-baked for you. And we have the only 100% real egg patty on the market.
You're kidding me.
What?
Yeah. Cause the first ingredient typically on these egg patties is oil. Cause it's typically oil whipped with egg to reconstitute it.
Oh,
so
no.
we knew we were the only ones using it. So we're also the only manufacturer of a food product with an egg in it that was certifiable by the American Egg Board, the Incredible Edible Egg People.
Yeah.
They literally certified that it is 100% egg. So I'm super excited because that's the game changer in the side-by-side and obviously the clean label sausage too. But
of course,
you know, just thinking about people don't think enough about what they're consuming and why.
Yes.
And you know, the name of the game is profit all day, every day. And for us, it's not, it's about quality and it's about you are what you eat.
And
it's about realness and that, you know, today's parent, they are more conscious. I hate for the next parent to be that woman that we saw at the store, sigh and sadness, right?
Exactly.
You're right. It's 2020. It's time to get better, do better things. So
that should be your marketing tagline. Don't sigh in sadness.
That's right. Feed your kids something good, something that's they'll want to eat that's good for them.
Yeah. Well, ironically enough, our tagline is changing breakfast for good.
And you've mentioned clean label a couple of times. Can you just define that really quickly for everyone?
That's actually a great question too. So, you know,
I'm full of them.
Right. Our definition of clean label is when we innovate, the first question is, can I get all the ingredients on a shelf at a grocery store? You cannot buy sodium acetate at a grocery store. So that should not be in the label, right? Mm. So you can't get potassium sorbate at the grocery store. So that should not be on the label. So for us, it's complete transparency in what is in there. It has to be literally as if you would have made it yourself. And it can't have any artificial additives, preservatives, gums, stabilizers, binders. There's no need, right? Like God made eggs because they are eggs. They're an incredible edible egg, right? Like, why are we messing with eggs?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that to us is what defines it. Some people think it's organic. Some people think it's GMOs. I think that's all labeling nonsense that people profit off of. So I don't actually think that that's any better sometimes than just having full transparency into what you're eating.
Yeah.
I think that's where the buck starts, right? And that's the sad thing. There's people rushing to the finish line trying to find what they define as clean label. Like, for example, the plant-based meat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Then it's not meat, first of all.
Right.
Second of all, like, right. There are cultures all over the world that have eaten vegan since thousands of years. And they have amazing cuisines made with standard raw vegetables, right? Mm-hmm. There is no need to dissect animal or vegetable protein, make it look like animal protein and bind it with 1,000 stabilizers, gums, and artificial preservatives. Like that is how that's made. That is not okay. That is not the key to enhancing vegan diets into our everyday lives. So, you know, we feel really strongly about that. And that's why, you know, for us, it starts with transparency and understanding what you're eating first so you can make better decisions about what you're going to allow yourself, your family, your body to ingest. So
awesome.
Jesus.
I know. Just on a personal note, I'm so excited about the breakfast biscuit because that is my favorite thing, but it's, you can't get one frozen. Like, you know, you just can't like at the ease of your house, you know, it's always going to take, you know, it's always going to have tons of chemicals.
Wait until you try it. I'll ship you some once they're in warehouse in the next couple of days or so.
I'm so excited.
It's a game changer. I want to see the kids' pictures when they eat them because if they're sad, then it's going to be really sad. But if they're happy, I know I've got it.
I know. Well, if they're sad, that's just because they're 12, 13, and 14. Sometimes, you know,
they are just sad.
We took one to a BTS concert, her favorite concert, and just was overwhelming.
Oh, nice.
And it was overwhelming. So, you know, sometimes you don't get the reaction you're expecting.
Like,
sometimes.
Well, she was so excited to go. Like, she was like, this could
she
be
was
my
just
Christmas present.
Shell shocked, I think,
because these tickets were hella expensive. And she was so excited to go. And then she goes and she's like shell-shocked. Like she had PTSD.
I know.
Oh my God, that whole thing.
I know. I was expecting like screaming and, you know, and there was a lot of other screaming from other people, but you know, she was just, and you know, it's just everyone handles things differently. So
yeah, very
true. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You could do it for her though.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. Well, we cannot wait for the breakfast sandwiches.
Oh
yeah.
The biscuits, because the biscuits are already awesome. I mean,
Imagine that you don't have to wait 30 minutes. That's the game changer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you, does it come with cheese?
So good, you're asking all the good questions. So no, it doesn't come with a nasty slice of cheese, because what people also don't understand, and we did focus groups on this, natural cheddar doesn't melt because it's a hard fat, right? Yes. So if you microwave it, it's just going to stay as a hard piece of cheese.
Yeah,
so people got weirded out because the edges that were exposed in the microwave got harder and they're like, ooh, this is gross. So then, but you can't do melty cheese. Because melty cheese has stabilizers in it to prevent the protein from breaking down. So it does melt, but it doesn't dissipate. If you use natural melty cheese, by the time it's done in the microwave, it will be oil. It's going to be completely fat. It's just, it's what it is. It's melting. It's because it's high fat. So it melts out. So there's no point in the cheese. So instead, our cheddar, so the sandwiches come in cheddar or buttermilk. The cheddar biscuit is the one for cheese lovers because the cheese flavor is in the biscuit instead of a nasty plastic piece of cheese.
You don't want plastic cheese. Plastic cheese doesn't.
You don't want plastic cheese. So that is your answer.
Wow. Awesome. Wow. I just got to say on a side note, we've done a lot of interviews. This is the first interview where Karen and I are looking at each other with our mouth agape like several times during like this.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome. We've been educated.
I mean, and you know, like the story of your dad, I mean, just everything. It's just like, what?
I know. And amazing. Yeah. It's fantastic. I love it.
Peter, I appreciate it.
Holy mackerel. Well, all right. Well, you know what? We greatly appreciate the time you spent with us on a Saturday. Hey, happy Asian American and Pacific Islander.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, it's great we're having you on. Look at this time.
The timing's great.
Right. We planned this, right?
Yeah, that's totally. Right. That's totally. Right. All right, and I'm going to be ignorant. Is this how long has this month been ours? Like, is this new?
You know, I actually don't know. I don't think it's new. I think it was one of those arbitrary things that got tossed out by some arbitrary white person in DEI because African Americans had a month and women had a month. Yeah. So they just started ticking off all the DEI boxes they had to check. But I think this is the first time in history that it's mattered the most.
Yes, yeah. Agreed.
Very excited about all the publicity that Asian Americans deserve.
Yes.
And really excited to see what other brands people are going to be able to discover. I think one of the things I love about the two of you the most is that I always say this, I'm an unapologetically American. I love this country.
Of course.
Yeah, right? Of course.
No other place like that. But it doesn't mean that I have to work in Asian affairs or work in ethnically Asian trades in order for me to say that I'm Asian, right? I'm happy to coexist among this amazingly pluralistic country.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people like us deserve credit no matter where we are, right? Mm. We don't need to be working, you know, in a Chinese food restaurant to say that we are Chinese in America. It's that designation needs to go away. And I really hope that, and I think Asians are amazing that way because we have this ability to ride the line no matter what culture it is. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're going to be the game changers that really bind this country together a lot better than, unfortunately, the historical factionism that has been created with other cultures. So, you know, I think this is a game changing month. And I think this will be the first time that we get to really be the glue that holds it together.
Yeah. I love it. Love it.
I'm all about glue. I got plenty of, plenty of belly fat. So I'm a binder. Don't put me in a microwave.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah, just be oil.
Yeah. I get like my edges get hard. It's terrible. Well, thank you. Thank you for everyone who wants to just read more about, you know, all this great stuff that's going on. Go to masondixiefoods.com.
Yeah.
And actually, Mason Dixie, what's behind that? Is it joining North and South? Like what's the impetus of the name?
Hilariously, it was a happy accident, like most of this business has been. I wanted to name the company Mason Dixon Biscuit Company because when I first started it, myself and the chefs that I'd hired for the restaurant, we were all from Maryland. And we were like, okay, if we're going to prove that we're Southern, we have to just we have to have something iconically Southern. I'm like, hey, we have the Mason-Dixon line. So I was like, that was the line to freedom. Let's call that. Let's do that. Right. And we couldn't trademark it because there's 1,000 companies with Mason-Dixon something. So I was like, you know what? Screw this. It's a woman-owned company. And I have a few friends named Dixie because it's a French name, actually.
Sure.
And so I was like, oh, this is perfect. It sounds like Dixon, but it's like a feminine touch on it. So I was like, all right, it's Mason-Dixie. And it stuck. And so, you know, people read into it as much as they want. Southerners are like, yeah, it's Dixie. Right. And then, then there's like, you know, the burners that are like mortified. And I'm like, calm down, Asian owned, gay owned. Like, my business partner's gay. Like, I'm like, just calm down. Right. It's a woman's name in French, it means 10. Calm down.
Yes. So, yes.
So it's that's kind of the origin, and it's sticking.
Good. Awesome.
Oh, wow. I wouldn't change it. It's awesome. So MasonDixieFoods.com, yeah. potluckcpg.org.
Yeah. And we got 2 fun questions.
Oh, that's, thank you.
I know. I can see he's like, wrap it, Robert. I'm going to wrap it up. But we almost missed the fun questions.
I'm so blown away by the microwavable sausage thing.
Imagining himself in a microwave.
I
seriously can't.
Listen, I go to McDonald's.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I'm not proud to say. But I've gone to McDonald's and my favorite breakfast thing is a sausage egg and cheese biscuit.
Yeah, so it'd be great if it were clean label.
I'll tell you, it's not clean label, but it is the most clean items on their menu are actually their breakfast menu. So if you're going to go to McDonald's, the best time to go is during breakfast because they actually do still use real eggs and pretty limited ingredient breads. So good for you.
Well, thank you.
Breakfast and not a Big Mac.
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's like,
well, and as sad as it was when they came out with the Big Mac with bacon, I was like, I got to try that.
And we haven't yet, but we haven't yet. Cause I was like, the last time I ate a Big Mac, I felt like I just ate the styrofoam container. Like,
oh, I know.
You know, it's just like sits in there. Like it's not food. Oh. It's like, all right, that is some bloat right there. For sure.
So, all right. Fun questions now.
Yeah.
Not that we were, you know, peppering you with super hard ones, not hard ones, but you know, serious ones, but your story is amazing. So thank you for sharing all that. So you're celebrating, you're launching this thing. You're launching a sausage thing. What you drinking in celebration?
Oh man, that's a hard one. I am a connoisseur of the beverage.
Yes. Oh yes. As are we.
If you're ever in Chicago, come on out because we're gonna.
I'm always in Chicago because our manufacturing facility is there.
Oh well, come on out. We've got a big yard. God. We got. Well, I mean, we're mixologists as well.
We'll cocktail the shit out of this place.
Yeah,
I'll be there next month, so I'll definitely ping you guys. You know, because I'm a connoisseur of the beverage, every year it kind of changes, and I'd say because of COVID, I've really gotten into Negronis.
Ooh, yeah.
And I started to perfect it and I'm like, ooh, this is interesting. So I'd say Negroni.
So now why did you get Negronis? Was it the guy from, what's the CNN guy? Stanley Tucci. Was it Stanley Tucci?
No. So it's funny. I'm not a boozy drinker. Like I typically don't like cocktails that are like prohibition style where it's all liquor. Like I have a lot of great craft cocktail bartenders that I've met over the course of my restaurant career. And most of them make fabulous cocktails because they focus on the ratios, right? It's sugar, tart from the acid, and then also the liquor. So I've always been into people that really do that balance really well. But the Negroni was interesting to me because one of my friends was like, well, you like these things. You should just try it, right? And so I was like, I hate Manhattans. I don't like them and stuff like that. He was like, no, just try it. I tried it and I was like, this is actually pretty damn good. And I was like, why do you think I like it? And he's like, first of all, I made it with Plymouth gin. Apparently, Plymouth gin is one of the only gins that doesn't have juniper in it. I don't like juniper.
Yeah.
So it's a clean gin. And then on top, I love citrus, right? So I love the orange flavor from burning the zest when he like stuck the peel in there. And I love bitter Campari. I will drink Campari soda in the summer or vermouth.
That's your mom.
Yeah. That is my mom's. That was her drink. Campari soda with a lemon twist.
It's like really bitter, but it's really tasty. So when he put it all together with the, because 2 summers ago, he got me onto sweet vermouth and soda. So it was a natural combination of all the things I liked. And that's when I was like, man, I really got into this. And then there's a really awesome bar here in Baltimore called Bluebird Cocktail Room. And they make a Negroni to die for. They do it like a Pisco Sour where they whip egg white into it.
So it's got the egg white.
Right?
A little creaminess.
But they make a zest essence. So when you drink it, it has like the taste of like, you know, when you get like a fresh orange juice, that like zest taste.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They isolated that flavor so that there's no orange peel in the Negroni, but you get it like tenfold because of that essence they created. So it's fabulous. And I'm like, now my mind's blown because I'm like, how many more ways can we get a Negroni to happen?
That's right. That's right. Love it.
Holy mackerel. All right. Well, now we know where to go in Baltimore.
That's right.
Damn. And trust me, Karen and I are never, never shy about visiting a bar. So
yes.
You have to try this place. That Negroni is to die for. It is delicious.
All right. All right.
But not on the list.
It's definitely on the list. And then last question. So you get your vaccines, you got your vax pass, whatever they call it now. Where are you going?
Got my vax pass. All you haters that don't want to get vaccinated, get vaccinated.
Oh, yeah, I know. No, we kidding, did. We just got our second shot. We're like, yay.
Yeah.
And we're almost there.
Yeah. Thank God.
Yes.
What? So where would you love to go?
Oh God, everywhere. But you know, I feel like my vision of where I can go is jaded now. Like the top of the list was Brazil, but that's going to take some time to crawl out of the hole that their leadership has put them in. So I'd say the second place I've always wanted to go, actually back to Stanley Tucci, who also, by the way, connective tissue here, looks exactly like my business partner, Ross. So it's just hilarious because we keep putting all these Stanley Tucci things on his desk because he looks just like us. But ironic because we talked about a Negroni. And all of my travels, I've been to Australia, I've been to Israel multiple times, been to Korea, I've been everywhere. I have not been to Italy.
Oh.
And I think it's because I've made it this artificial mecca for myself where I'm like, if I want to go, I want to go for like a month and
yes.
Every region, right? Because it's so different everywhere. And I love Italian wine and, you know, obviously the food, It's just also gorgeous, right? So I've held it on this like pedestal for so long. I haven't had a chance to go, but man, if we're all about to die from some invisible virus, I got to get there as soon as possible.
I agree.
Top of my list.
That's the top of our list too. Well, it's because of watching Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
Like searching for, I mean, it's a great, we're like, we want to go there. We're going to go to that bar. We're going to go to this restaurant. We're going to go there.
I also love that he's had this like early 50s, like second life now as an influencer beyond what he, you know, beyond, what was it? What was the movie?
Like Hunger Games.
He was in Devil Wears Prada, right?
Yes.
Like he gets to un-gay himself and like, you know, make himself this icon of like food and culture. So like, wow, what a turnaround, right?
Yeah, I know.
He is just the coolest, though. I mean, first of all, you know, he's fishing, and the clothes that he's wearing has got to be $1,500.
I'm like, wardrobe.
Yeah, like, I'm geez. Like, well, you don't want me in that wardrobe.
Those skinny pants.
You want to talk about sausage stuffed in something? It's not going to be pretty.
Skinny pants.
Yeah, no, not at all. But but I mean, you know, he's very stylish and. He's just so damn cool and he's so down to earth. It's fascinating watching. I just love that show.
Yeah,
I do too. There needs to be more people. I think it's great that like he's kind of taken over for Anthony Bourdain in many ways and honest and authenticity of like, you know, people enjoying food and bringing people together. I'm glad that there's somebody else doing it and that archetype is back in the media instead of like the hate filled throttle that we've had to deal with for, you know, 5+ years here. So it's nice to have that familiar, like culture loving sense back into the world. So good on Stanley Tucci.
That's right. That's right. It's great. Well, thank you so much for being on. It's been just wonderful talking with you.
Yeah. No, you're a powerhouse for one. Just I love the energy. I love the focus. And I love the, you know, no holds barred and you know, take no prisoners attitude because it clearly shows you're kicking ass and you're passionate and, you know, hats off to you. It's amazing. Can't wait to try this sausage thing.
Oh, I cannot wait.
The sausage biscuit sandwich. Cannot wait. And can't wait to have you come out Chicago.
We'll, that's right.
We will be happy and honored to have you pop on over and we'll have an awesome night.
Well, let's do it. We'll do a multi-prong barbecue. We could do a little yakitori. We could do a little Korean barbecue.
Yes.
We could do a pork. We could do a whole pork roast for your Hawaiian.
Yes.
Hell yes. Well, I'm actually on a competitive barbecue team.
I know.
So we can do all kinds of stuff. Look, I ain't fat for nothing, right? So we can... We could do all kinds of fun stuff. It'll be great.
100% in, man. I love a grill. I will totally throw down. Let's do it.
All right.
Date set. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. You have an amazing day and can't wait to see you soon.
Thank you both.
All right. Aw. See?
I know. She great?
Gosh. And now she's going to be coming over?
I know. Woohoo!
That is awesome. I can't wait. I got to up my game though, because now she's expecting.
I know, like she has an amazing food line, like, you know.
Yeah, and she had a restaurant and this whole other deal. Yeah. I'm gonna make her like mac and cheese. Like I
We gotta work on it. But seriously, I love all of her advice, especially for girls.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and young ladies, and you know, find yourself a kick butt lady mentor.
Absolutely. Get yourself someone wearing a red power suit.
I know. Take on the world.
How cool is that? That she had that very distinct picture in her mind, and then someone actually wore that exact thing.
And was just blunt and like, "What's going on here?
Who the F are you?"
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
It's great. It's great.
Love it. Yeah. So guys, yes, please go check her out. Check out her website, of course, masondixiefoods.com. Support that freaking awesome microwave sausage biscuit.
Oh man.
Sandwich that's coming out.
I cannot wait for that.
That is going to be amazeballs.
Yum.
Like, so just amazing. Her biscuits are so damn good. I can't even imagine.
Oh,
I can't even imagine. And then also, make sure to check out that mentorship program that she's got going on, which is also really cool. Potluckcpg.org. So that's also, she's so cool. Just always giving back, right? Like she knows where she came from. She doesn't forget that.
Yeah.
And she brings people along with her. And I think that's just, it's
the best.
It's how you want to do it.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's so admirable. That's so inspiring.
Yeah.
So very, very cool. So I can't wait for her to come out to Chicagoland and I'll disappoint her with my cooking and then, but we'll have a good time. We'll have a good time. So, it's dad joke time.
Oh, it's your favorite time.
It is. You ready?
Yep. Lay it on me.
You know, we hired a handyman to do some odd jobs around the house.
We did.
Yeah. And, he did every other thing on the list.
Oh boy. Where's that sound effect?
Oh, this one. All right. Hold on. All right. I got another one. All right. How about this? Did you know that I got banned from the gym?
You did?
Yeah. I guess I just didn't work out. More crickets.
Oh, no.
Come on.
These have been ways to torture your children with dad jokes.
Which I love. I love torturing children.
Well, I mean, sometimes, is all you get.
And somehow,
at least they know, you know, you've made a connection of,
Yeah. Well, these days, that's like my only ring of satisfaction. Right.
Mother,
Yeah. The heavy sigh and the eye roll is all I get.
That's right. But that's okay. Cause deep down they're like, oh, we've connected.
Fat guy's talking to me again. So thank you so much for listening to the interview. Thank you for being a part of the show. We love having you guys here. If you have any, if you want to listen to all of our other interviews and content that we have, go visit whattheparent.com.
That's right.
If you have any questions or, you know, some people that might have some very interesting and cool things going, whether it's parenting or not, we'll bring it back to parenting. Don't you worry.
That's right. We're not your average parenting podcast.
Oh gosh,
we're looking for advice from all over the place.
That's right.
And we need it.
And everyone has a story, right? And everyone has some cool perspective. So it's neat.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So, you know, some peeps or you have an idea about something, ping us, send us an email over at podcast@whattheparent.com. If you really love us, like you really love us, please.
And you have too much money.
You
need to give some of it away.
Right.
Give it before, to us.
Yeah. You want to try to avoid the tax man and give money away so you're not taxed as much, even though this is all post-tax.
We're not a charity.
No, we're not. Clearly, I'm not.
We're also not. We're not making a profit, but it's not for lack of trying.
It's fun though.
That's right.
Patreon, whatever that website. Go visit. check out whattheparent.com, become a supporter, and you know, there's extra content in there and all kinds of fun stuff. So go check that out, and don't be a stranger.
That's right. Come on back next week.
Come visit with us. We always got some interesting guests on, and we're having a blast. We hope that you guys are having a blast too. Hope you found it entertaining at the minimum, and maybe even educational, make you think a little bit. Thank you. Thank you for being a part of it. And we will see you on the flip side.
All right. See you next time.